Hi, everybody. This is Mandy Speaks Up. I am Mandy. I am your host. I want to thank all of my listeners. This podcast actually started as me sharing my own experience and walking away from the Potter's House cult and the things that involved all of that. But now it has grown into bringing in other survivors. This is a survivor's table. This is a safe place. Anything that is spoken here is your, you know, your, this is a safe place for any survivor of any toxic environment. It doesn't have to be a cult. And so today I have Angela with me. She is such a beautiful soul. I am so thankful that she has chosen to be here and to share her story. She is the daughter of a pastor, also known as a cult leader in Canada. She has chosen to share her story here. And again, viewer discretion is advised. I do not, some of the things may be triggering. I just like to say that at the beginning. But thank you so much, Angela, for being here. And I am so excited that you're here.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. So there's so much of your story that was very horrific, and I only know a little bit of it. And so there's a lot of things that I would love to discuss and hear your story. And I want to jump right into it and get into it. And so is this your first time sharing your story publicly?
I mean, other than like friends and stuff like that. Yeah.
And writing it out.
Yeah. And therapy, lots of therapy, but yeah, awesome. Other than that, yeah, it is.
Awesome. And we're going to get into, all your healing aspects. What did you use to heal after leaving this place that, to date, there are people who do not consider it a cult. There are people to date that do not refer this place as toxic or abusive. They don't believe that it is. So I love to have people come in here who are survivors and that are willing to share the story, because you become a face. You become the face of, I'm sure, hundreds that have escaped or have been removed, because you are able to be removed as you were, and you were going to get into that, shunned and from this place. So you don't, some people don't escape. Some people are kicked out. Some people are thrown out for various reasons, as you were. And so there are so many that leave, and sadly, there are some that even pass away and they never get to share their story with anybody. And a lot of people may not believe them. There are parts of my story that I thought nobody would believe. And so I just want you to know that this is validation for you. And this is validation for everybody who's going to watch this, and they're going to listen to it and they're going to know. And then for those that are just watching it because they're curious of what goes on inside of a place like this. They wonder how somebody can get into it or be born into it. And they just want to research about it because they have a family member that is inside of a place like this, and they want to know more and get inside the head of somebody who's actually been in this place. So I just want to start with your story. And what city, state, country was the cult that you you left or were kicked out of?
Like in Alberta, Canada. So, yeah.
Canada.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I just had an interview with someone who had left the cult in Australia. So it's so outrageous that so many parts of the country and people have a similar story. And that's one of the things that have really stuck out for a lot of people is, how in the world can somebody from Australia, somebody from Texas, US, and then now somebody from Canada have similar stories? It's so crazy. And it shows how real this is and that it's still going on to this day.
Absolutely.
So I want to begin with your story here. The difference between your story and mine would be that you were born into it. So I want you to start with that, because as you're born into this place, this becomes your skin. This becomes natural. This becomes normal. So as you're born into it, is it a normal everyday life? Like, is this just something that's just you're used to and you don't, you just, or what is it that has, is there a point in your childhood where you feel something is different, is not normal, or is it you go through your whole childhood, you go through your whole teenage years as this is life, this is normal, there's nothing wrong with this. It's just, what is there somewhere in there that you finally start thinking, I think I'm different.
I think for me, like growing up and everything like that, even as a small child, like I always felt like, gosh, everybody else I know who goes to church doesn't go to church 7 days a week, or they always have time for like actual extracurricular activities that don't involve handing out flyers while you're out and about or stuff like that. And like I can remember even being small and feeling like that. But I want to say probably when I was like maybe 13, 14, I like had questions, and they were questions that every time I was asked, they didn't have answers to, or I like was shut down, or it was, oh, we just don't believe in that, or it was, and I was always just like, but if these are questions and they are biblical questions, like why don't you have an answer? And then probably around the time that I was like 17, I want to say, I actually started dating a boy outside of the church, and my parents were really, really, really upset about it. And he went to church, and he was like to this day probably one of the most actual, legitimate, godly people I've ever met. And he like validated a lot of my questions for me. Like, you know, he didn't go to church every Sunday. Sometimes he would just go sit beside a lake and read his Bible. And like that was his piece of church. And I was like, whoa. I thought, like, you're still gonna go to hell, right? And he's like, what? No. He's like, that's where I find God. And I was just like mind blown. And so, like, from there, like, I want to say that's when I really was like, something is off here. So, yeah, that's kind of, I don't know. I don't think I ever really fit in with the whole entire thing. And I'm like, have always my entire life been the person to like question and push and stuff like that. So, yeah.
So you would say about 13, that's whenever you start asking questions. What kind of questions were you asking? Do you remember?
Oh goodness. Actually, one of the ones that have always like been, even to this day, a question in my mind is like the Potter's House and all of the organization, like CFM in general, is like they are the people who are going to heaven. And like if you talk to them about anybody else and they just don't believe the right way or yada yada yada. And I remember I would be like, okay, but in the Bible, it states that like it's a matter of the heart, right? It is God sees our heart. And I was always like, so what if you take a Mormon or a Muslim and there's somebody who their heart is pure and they do believe in God? Like, will they get to heaven? And that question was either always met with anger or it was shut down. Or it was like, why would you even ask something like that? And I could never understand. I was just like, but that is a valid question because based on if we follow what the Bible says, then yeah, there's a possibility that they'll be there because their heart is in the right place. And yeah, that was definitely a big one. So
Right. So, in your time in this, growing up in this place, what you said 7 days a week. Walk me through, your time in this place in a nutshell. What does every day look like? What would your every day look like compared to somebody that you would say is in a normal life?
Well, Mondays was band practice, Tuesdays was drama practice, Wednesdays was church, Thursdays was generally some sort of front door music scene. Fridays was outreach. Saturdays was probably doing something on the church, fixing something, or Bible study, or some sort of, again, night scene music thing. Or and then Sundays was church twice. So yeah. And there'd be stuff like we would want to go into soccer or stuff like that, and it might wind up on, and it's like, oh, well, it falls on a night of church during the week, so we can't do that. It's like, yeah, but church is literally every night. And you're like, oh, well, you're in some form of ministry because you're a pastor's kid, so you have to be there. And it's like, yeah, so.
So what would you feel, what was the pressure of being, a pastor's kid, a cult leader's daughter? What are some of the things that you felt were different within just somebody that was going to church?
You're always on a pedestal. So you have to look the certain way, act a certain way, dress a certain way. You're not allowed to be too wild or too crazy or too much yourself. You have to, like be a good example. And yeah, like I feel the pressure put on you at a very young age is outrageous. Like I was actually just saying to my friend yesterday, like obviously we grew up, Halloween is a hell thing and you're not allowed to participate in it, and so is Christmas, and like Santa doesn't exist. And my daughter, she's 4, and like I don't raise her like that. Santa's totally real. She can believe in unicorns and fairies till she decides they are in fact not real. But I remember being 4 years old, maybe 5 actually, and we were allowed to play with the next door neighbor kids, and they were roughly my age. We were sitting in our cherry tree, and it was like just after Halloween, and they were eating Halloween candy. And they were like, "Hey, do you guys want some?" And I was like, "Oh no." As like a 5-year-old, this was my head. I was like, "Oh no, if we eat that, we're gonna go to hell." Because it happened to come from Halloween, and Halloween is the devil's day, and like you're gonna go to hell. And like my friends, they're like 5 years old, they're like, "What is hell?" I'm like, "Oh, it's a place where you go for forever and ever, and there you're just tormented all the time by all your worst fears. Like there'll just be tons of spiders all over the place because I'm afraid of spiders." And like as a 5-year-old kid, that is where my mindset was at 5 years old. And like now being a mom of a child who is almost 5 years old, her level of innocence is like, "Mom, look, my unicorn's alive." And I'm like, wow. And like just two totally different spectrums. Yeah, and it's just the amount of pressure and everything like that to they just desensitize you to, and I very much personally believe, like, I don't know if it's like that for normal kids that come out of the fellowship, but as a pastor's kid, they suck every ounce of innocence out of you and ingrain you with just what they want you to believe and grow up with a fear, that you're no matter what you're going to do, you're going to go to hell pretty much. So
Yeah, that definitely sounds like not normal.
no.
In that alone, like that's even the small stuff that some people would consider small stuff. That's already not normal. There
Right.
is no excuse for a child growing up that this place of fire exists and everybody's going to go there if you do not do or go where we go, like
into yep.
this and believe what we believe in. It's so, it's grooming, it's manipulation. And for somebody that's born into it, it becomes a part of your very essence. It becomes a part of you. I can't even imagine being born into it. And I walked into it when I was 16. So I can't even imagine how much harder I'm going to say, because being born into it, having your own family in it, how do you even think about speaking up? Like, how do you even consider walking away from this place when your whole family, or, you know, your parents at least, are in this place? You've been raised in this place, born into this place. You are the very essence of the representation of what this place is. And so I really believe that that's why the pressure has to be on, you know, the daughter, the son, the kids of these leaders, because you are the representation of this place.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to mirror what they are putting into you so that you can show others that, hey, I'm okay. I believe in all this shit and I'm okay. I believe in this fire, this hell place that everybody's going to go to that doesn't go to church every single day and believe the stuff we believe in. Like, but look at me, I'm okay. And I think that is what that's what the purpose is for everybody in that place, but especially for these leaders and their kids, their wives, because if you're not okay, then how the hell are they going to convert other people that they will be okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I want to, so yeah, that answers the question of what is something that you show me what is not normal in that place, because you have people that will watch this that have never been in a place like this. And they're going to be like, well, what's so different? Because how can you consider a cult? And if you watch, for those that want to know more about, like, what is a cult? Why is this place even considered a cult? You can go back to part one of my interview that I had with Heather Wiley, which the link will be below once the replay is up. And you can hear more. I discuss what is the attributes of a cult? Why does this place even, how can this place be considered a cult? And I go through all of those by a professional who does work in cult related environments and stuff like that. And so I named all of those in the part one with Heather Wiley. So for those that want to know, well, how can this be considered a cult? Like, I think it's just a cult, a church. No, you can research and you will know that this place checks every trait of a cult. And so it's not normal. So I want to go into you. You were a teen bride.
Mm-hmm.
You were married off as a teenager, which is something that is very encouraged and pressured. I myself was strongly pressured to marry as a teen bride. I was actually considered an underage, I was considered a child bride in the state of Texas, because in the state of Texas, I believe it's under 18, you're considered a child bride. So I was 17 when I married. So in the state of Texas, I was considered a child bride, which I didn't even know that until I left and researched. So teenagers you are heavily pressured to get married. And so you were a teen bride. And so I want to talk about, I've seen girls as young as 15 get married off. I don't know if you've seen younger girls get married off, but I know for myself personally, in the cult, my local cult that I was in, the youngest I've seen was 15. They were 15 getting married. And it didn't even ring bells. It was so, because it was something that was so, so natural. In there, marry them off as quickly as possible before they can think for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think I had maybe just I was either still 18 or had just turned 19, I think. And yeah, I got married to a boy in the church. I was all of the wife that I was supposed to be.
A
I like,
submissive
pardon?
wife.
I don't do submission very well in general, and I never have, but like,
Good for you.
I still like, I woke up at 5 in the morning, made him lunch, packed him a warm lunch. I worked full time, he worked full time. Come home, I would make supper, I would clean the house, yada, yada, yada. Like, I did everything that I was supposed to do. And he was a lazy asshole. That's like the best term I can put on that. And so, and again, I was just like, hey, it is what it is. Like, this is what I'm supposed to do. This is my job in life. And so, 6 months down the road, like, he started, I would come home from work and he would already be home. And like, I would get home around 5 every day. And I was like, that's weird. You didn't text me and let me know you were off work early or whatever. And I'd be like, oh, what time did you get off today? And he'd be like, oh, noon. I'm like, that's really odd. Whatever. Kind of like, you know, my mind is like questioning, but I'm not, you know, supposed to question anything. And so then obviously, like, I don't know how deep we can get into sex and stuff on here, but I like was a good wife in that sense too. And then he would just like kind of get funky with it, and I was like, yeah, hey, whatever. And one night, very like vividly in my mind, I went to bed and he was still up. I think he was, I don't know what, on his phone, whatever. And then he like rolled over and he wanted to have sex. And I was just super tired. And I was like, no, like just not tonight. I am tired. And he proceeded to force himself on me. And so afterwards, I got out of bed and I was just like, I'm gonna go sleep on the couch. When you wanna fix this, you know where to find me. And so 3 weeks down the road, he walked into the bathroom while I was running myself a bath and he was like, can we talk? And I was like, okay. I assumed in my mind that he was like finally going to fix and apologize and whatever else you have to do to fix what you do. And he's like, I want a divorce. And I was like, all right, not a problem. And he looked at me, he's like, aren't you gonna cry? And I was like, I will never give you the satisfaction of seeing me cry. And he walked out of the bathroom and I called my mom and I was bawling. And I called my mom and I was like, Mom, he just asked me for a divorce. And my mom was like, you go out there and you beg him to take you back because we don't believe in divorce. And I was like, Mom, I will never beg somebody to love me in my entire life. I will never be somewhere where I'm not wanted. And so we proceeded to split up. He moved back in with his parents. He dropped and left everything. So I had to deal with everything. He just packed his stuff and off he went. Moved back in with his parents. I went drinking with my best friend for my birthday because it was right around my birthday. And a few weeks later, I get a call from my dad's head pastor, and he was like, it pretty much started with, so I hear that you guys are getting a divorce. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, well, we don't believe in divorce. And I'm like, well, that's unfortunate for you because I'm not going to stay where I'm not wanted. He's like, and then the second thing he followed up with was, well, I heard you weren't a very good wife and you went drinking with your friend for your birthday. And I was like, oh, yeah. Well, you know that that's a sin. We don't do that. We don't believe in it. Blah, 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 blah. And I was like, well, while we're on this phone call, he's like, I was like, I assumed you talked to him. He's like, yeah, I did. I was like, did he also tell you that he raped me? And he told me that his exact words to me were, you are his wife. It is not rape. And I was like, well, we have different ideas on that then, because I'm pretty sure when you say no, it is no, no matter what. And so pretty much I was just like, you know what? Like, this is how you guys choose to deal with this. I don't care, because I'm not going back to him. I want nothing to do with this. This is absolutely ridiculous. And so in behind the scenes, my parents ended up disowning me. I got kicked out of church. They completely and totally wrote me off. I don't know if you want me to keep going, but I can. Okay, so I started seeing this guy. He was 36, so he was 16 years older than me. I was 20 now. So he was 16 years older than me, and he was extremely abusive. Like, he almost killed me, I think, about 7 times. Like, very abusive man. And there was one time in particular, and he groomed me. Like, and one thing I will say is that, like, growing up in a place where people groom you, you don't realize when someone's grooming you. And so he very much picked me and he groomed me, and he knew the position I was in. And so looking back now in hindsight, yeah, he absolutely groomed me. And so I had ended up moving back in with my parents, but when they disowned me and all this sort of stuff, I had nowhere to go. And he was like, why don't you come move in with me? And I was like, okay. Like, and at this point, he was still a really good guy. So there he is, my knight in shining armor. And so I moved in with him. And yeah, he was brutal. Like, mentally, physically, sexually, just a brutal man. And there was one time in particular, I want to say maybe 2 years down the road, where we were driving. It was like 2 in the morning. It was Easter, so it was still quite cold here. And he was mad at me for something, and I don't remember what. But I remember he punched me in the face. And he pulled me out of the vehicle in the middle of nowhere, and he just drove off and he left me at 2 in the morning, and my phone had like 2% on it. Okay, well, I was like, yeah, I guess I'll just start walking. Like, eventually I'll hit the city and whatever, figure it out from there. And this car drives up beside me, and this guy is like, and I'm bawling and like a mess. And he's like, are you okay? Can I take you anywhere? And I was like, well, at this point, I'm pretty much dead anyways. So, like, might as well just get in a stranger's car. So, the only place that I could think to go, though, was my parents, because I had nowhere else to go. So, I went to my parents' house. It was 2 in the morning. And, like, the moment I walked into the door, they like started praying over me and casting out demons. And I was like, whoa, whoa, this is. I'm not here for this. Like, I want you guys to be my parents. Like, where is my mom and my dad? That's who I'm looking for right now. And so they were like, well, you can't stay here unless you come back to church and unless you repent and blah, 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 blah. And I was just like, no, I don't believe in anything you guys believe in. Like, I will not. And so my mom's like, Kate, okay, well then I best guess you better call him and get him to come pick you up. And yeah, and I was like, Mom, I was like, you do realize that he is very abusive, right? She's like, oh yeah, I'm pretty sure he's the devil himself, but I guess you get what you deserve. And I was just like, okay. So I went back. And like, and that's the problem, right? With abusive relationships, you consider leaving and then you're like, oh, I'm just crazy and irrational. I'll just stay for a while. And then, you know, he tries killing you again. You're like, ah, this isn't totally normal, but it is what it is. I guess I get what I deserve. And so yeah, I ended up going back. And then one of my actually childhood best friends, her and her family had also come to church. they left when there was a church split, and her family also thought it was a cult and everything like that. And so I had started talking to her again, and we became very good friends. And so she was just like, "Look, you need to pack your stuff and tell him that I need help with my kids, and you're just going to come and stay with me for a few days, and then you never go back." And that's what happened, is I went there, I stayed, and I just never went back. And yeah, and then I ended up getting pregnant. And so I thought that perhaps like maybe a baby would, me being pregnant, my parents, they would be like, "Oh, we get to be grandparents." And it would, kick in some of the maternal stuff that just was never there. And so I contacted them. We slowly started rebuilding our relationship. And of course, at every turn, they were like, "You need to come to church. You need to get saved. You're backslidden. You're going to hell. Blah, 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 blah." And I very much was like, "I want nothing to do with this. Nothing at all. Like, you take me as I am, or you don't take me at all. And that's my bottom line." And so they got good with it for a little bit. Like, you would still at least once a visit get like, "We need to pray over you," or "You're a sinner," or something like that. But it wasn't so bad. And once I had my daughter, I put very flat stipulations in place where I was like, "You do not groom my kid. She gets to grow up as she is. She gets to have Santa, and she gets to have Halloween, and she gets to be a normal fucking child. I will not have anything else." And so it turned out that my mom ended up being her child care for a while because I couldn't find a good day home for her. I ran a day home for a bit, and then I ended up going back to work when COVID hit because it was just chaos. So my mom watched her for a bit, and then all of a sudden she would come home and she'd be like, "Mom, we need to pray over our food before we eat it." She's like, "Two." I'm like, "No, actually, we don't. We don't do that here." And or she would come home singing "Jesus Loves Me," or for her first Christmas, they got her a Bible. And I'm like, no, this is not how I want my child raised. And so they would repeatedly cross all my boundaries just over and over and over again. Like, "We know what's best. You don't know. She's gonna go to hell. Blah, 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 blah." I finally got to the point where I cut all communications with them. I just put her in daycare, dropped them all together. I was like, "Nope, this, if you guys can't respect my boundaries, then that's the end of that." And so that was almost a year ago now, a year ago in January. And they would send crazy, crazy messages. Just like one time, they sent one of the guys that I was seeing a text message, and I think it was for my dad actually. And he was like, "We're worried for your guys' souls, but not her soul, because we know that we're taking her with us." And I was like, "I'm sorry, are we talking about the death of a 3-year-old? That's not okay." They ended up taking me to court, me and her dad, actually, and I should say, in the middle of all this, so me and her dad aren't together, but we're pretty civil with each other. We have a really good co-parenting relationship. And they sucked him in and into the cult and into everything. And I said over and over, "They're a cult. I don't care if you go to church, just don't go to that one. Go to any other church, don't go to that one." And I just said it over and over and over again. And he was like, "And you're overreacting. This is ridiculous." And he's like, "They're really good people." And I'm like, "No, they're narcissists and they're awful people. And it's a cult, like any other one, not that one." So now, fast forward, he was going for probably about a year and a half. And so once I cut contact, there was one time where they actually, he went to church on a Wednesday night and they like everybody left. And my dad was like, we need to talk to you. And so he's like, oh, okay. And he stays. And my mom starts the crocodile tears of, oh, we just miss her. We miss our granddaughter. How dare she take her away from us? And then my dad starts yelling at him for like 2 hours. They like kept him in the church and they were just berating him and yelling at him, saying, oh, it's your fatherly right that you need to let Angela let us see her and all this sort of stuff. It was absolutely crazy. And so he like kind of started to see a little bit that like there was all of a sudden a change. The moment they weren't getting what they wanted, they were like, we're going to throw our power down on you now. And so he kind of was like, oh, maybe you aren't as crazy for thinking it's a cult as you were once were, right? And so they ended up taking us to court for visitation of our daughter. And like we have a great relationship. We have 50-50 custody. She is the happiest kid. There is no issues. And they decide to take us to court. We have never stepped foot in court in the entire time our daughter has been alive. And yet my parents took us to court. And so they took us to court. They wanted visitation rights of her, all this sort of stuff. It was absolutely insane. And so, yeah, here we are standing in court, and I'm like, this is the reason why I don't want my child around my parents. They are part of a cult. This, and I actually had an email from when my dad disowned me back when, from 2015, of my dad disowning me and all of this crazy, like, we are worried for your soul is in it, and blah, 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 blah. And so I set, put it in my affidavit back to them. I was like, this is a cult. This is the reason why I don't want my daughter around him. And they ended up throwing it out. They withdrew. And so, yeah, they haven't seen her in over a year now, and we don't have any contact with them. And thankfully, her dad is now out of it as well. And he also believes it's a cult and is, yeah, it's been crazy. So,
Yeah, that is horrific. Like you could, I mean, going all the way back to the beginning of the vicious attack against you, that happened in your marriage. You know, this is actually sadly something normal that I learned leaving this place. There have been other wives, women in this place that have spoken up about that, and it's so sad. This stuff is normal, and the fact that this cult leader, pastor, his response to you after you spoke up about it is one of the reasons why survivors, no matter what the situation is, in some kind of violation like this, will not speak up because they don't want to hear the words of blame or guilt that is put on the victim. And so this is a perfect example of some of the questions that you will hear people say, well, why didn't you tell anybody? Why didn't you speak up? Why didn't all these? And let me just say, this is one of the reasons why some people, sadly, probably to this day, will not speak up because, well, nobody will believe me, or I don't have enough evidence, or I was married, so it's okay. It's okay that it happened because he was my husband. And all of these things causes a victim to keep it inside. And the fact that you spoke up about it is so fucking brave. Like this is so it's beyond brave. Like the brave doesn't even give it justice because you spoke up on it. Even as someone who grew up in this whole shitty situation is supposed to be normal, and you speak up about this, like, wait, no, this isn't right. Even though you have the people going against that. just stay. And this is normal. This is normal because all kinds of different horrific attacks, violations happen. Specifically inside of this cult, there are people that are in other parts of the country that as of day are in court because of things that abuse and violations that have happened against them. And so is there, like, did you ever consider, like, taking that beyond, like, speaking up about it to the pastor, to your parents? Did you ever consider going beyond that, like taking it to, like, law enforcement, court, or anything like that?
No, because growing up, we're always taught to turn the other cheek. And so, honestly, in all of the terrible situations that I've been in life, going to law enforcement has never been even a thought that would cross my mind, because you're so, they groom you to just turn the other cheek, just turn the other cheek, just, oh, it's okay if someone's horrible to you, just turn the other cheek. And it's like, no, I don't, that's not how you get away with your shitty behavior. And so, no, I never considered going to the law enforcement about it. Even my abusive ex, the thought never even crossed my mind to, like, go, because in my mind I thought, no one's going to listen to me. No one is going to believe or hear what I have to say, because it is my word against his. And it was just, and it never, you know, oh, you don't want to ruin his life. Oh, you don't, blah, 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 blah. And so, yeah, it's so ingrained into you that, like, now in hindsight, like, who I am as a person now, would I? 12,000%. Wouldn't even, like, I'd be like, okay, I'm gonna go make a police report now, because that's just how much I have restructured who I am as a person. But at that point in time, definitely not.
Right. I remember, you know, continual sermons of forgive, forgive, forgive. It doesn't matter what the other person has done to you. Forgive, forgive, forgive. And that's actually one of the things that started getting me to wake up from religion and Christianity, honestly. Personally for me, seeing that the religion in general was the toxic and was the like the drain where it was coming from was all fucked up. And I stopped putting so much blame on this cult, and I started realizing that the shit that they were preaching and believing in was the shit, was the bullshit that was causing a lot of the physical and the grooming and the manipulation came from the belief system. And so one of the things, and it was the forgiving no matter what thing that got me when I left the cult and I started going to another church, because I thought, well, maybe it's just this church that's fucked up. And because I, at that point, I didn't even know it was a cult yet. I didn't believe it yet. It wasn't until I started having nightmares. And that when I started having nightmares, in my own nightmares, I was screaming at this place saying, you're a cult. And I was screaming at them. I hadn't even acknowledged that or admitted that to myself. When I woke up from that nightmare, I was like, oh fuck, it is a cult. This is a fucking cult. And it was that nightmare. It was like my brain was telling me, like my higher self was letting me know, like, this is a cult. And in my nightmare, I just remember there being blood and like literal blood. And it was like, even though it wasn't real, it was a spiritual abuse attack against my soul, against my spirit, that it was real. Even though nobody could see the wounds, nobody could see the effects from the outside. Like, if I walked next to you, you wouldn't turn around and be like, oh, I think that girl was in a cult. Like, the public doesn't see that. The people don't see that. So, but that nightmare validated and was like, But you do have cuts and bruises and wounds all over your body from this place that you were in for almost 20 years. And then I can't imagine even more you being born into it, you being pre-groomed as a child, and then kind of like your whole life is going to filter through these belief systems. And so when I went to another church, when I walked away from that cult and I went to this other church, I'm sitting there and they're preaching a sermon, which is a little more sweeter than the ones in the Potter's House. So I thought it was better. And I'll never forget the sermon that kind of caused my whole body, because I was starting to feel my body now. Because in that place, they teach you to ignore your body.
Yep.
And ignore your emotions and ignore your feelings and take on their belief system, their emotions, and be numb. And
so that you're in the will of God.
Exactly. Like, as long as you're in the will of God, their God, then it doesn't matter what you feel or think, as long as you're in that, so you can go to heaven. And so I'm sitting there in that other church, and this preacher dude is like aggressively, a little more kinder than this cult, but still aggressively saying you have to forgive, no matter what has been done to you. Basically, forgive, because if not, you're going to go to hell. Your life is going to be all messed up. And I remember sitting there wanting to scream, like, how dare you? How dare you stand up there and say you have to forgive? You have no idea what these people have gone through, and you don't know what I've gone through, and I don't have to forgive. I can live my life the way I want. I don't need anybody telling me what I need or can't do. And after that, I slowly started clearing myself from these beliefs that I had believed even before the cult. But, and so it's just so sad to see what like the manipulation does to you. And then you leave this place and it's good, but then you find yourself in a similar situation with abuse of partners. Mm-hmm. But what's really, really similar to this is a toxic relationship seems very similar to this cult, because you want to leave, you think about leaving, but you stay. So many people leave and come back.
Yeah.
Leave, come back, just like a relationship. It's so similar that if you see how similar it is, it really blows your mind. And I don't think that it's just the cult. I really believe it has, with religion and Christianity, have similar traits to a toxic relationship. Just forgive, just turn the other cheek, just love. And that goes on in a relationship. This partner treats you abusively, just love him, he'll change. Or yep. Love her, she'll change. Yep. Forgive. Forgive, forgive, love them, kill them with kindness, all kinds of bullshit that keeps you in this place thinking that you have to be the person to save them or help them get to heaven, blah, blah, blah. But,
and I think the other correlation too that strikes me is like, and if you don't, what's on the other side is hell. Or what's on the other side is you'll never make it without me, or you're only who you are because of me, or you're nobody otherwise. And I think those ones also correlate quite well between religion in general and also toxic relationships, for sure. I think because they both attract narcissistic people.
Yeah. And it just keeps you there. And you're just like vomiting, and you're living in that vomit, and you don't realize it. And it's just, your whole story is just like so fucked up. How you said, you know, you're leaving this abusive situation, and then they just tell you to go back, and they have to disown you. They have to. It's when you walk into their door, you would think that the as a parent myself, the first thing is, I don't give a shit who you are, where you've been. Are you okay? Come here.
Yeah, Let me hug you. Let me hold you. I have missed you. Or better yet, like for me as a parent, let me go get my gun because we have things to deal with. Like I just your the first reaction should be to protect your child, not to send them back to the wolves, but only, I guess, in this case, if it aligns with if you want to fall back in line. And I'm like, why would I want to leave one abusive relationship to go back to another one? I don't. So.
Exactly. And it's like, instead of like, let me call the police, like I'm gonna call and tell them what this person did to you. It's mind-blowing in the fact, and also everything is kept inside of this place. It's you go to your pastor for all the answers. You don't go to police. You go to the pastor. And you know, there's stories of times where, you know, I would myself try to make that phone call to, you're trying to go to the higher ups. Like if this pastor, this cult leader is not answering your questions and he's being abused of, you know, in any way, let me go up to the higher up. And I remember writing a letter to the freaking founder, you know, in Prescott, Arizona. I wrote a letter to him talking about how abusive the cult leader was at the time. I try to make a phone call to the mother church. I don't like calling it a cult. I mean, a church. I like calling it for what it is, but the cult in Gallup, you know. And I try to make these phone calls, and it was like shut down because you're a woman. Shut down because you're speaking up against who? You're speaking up against
Yeah,
who? Like,
exactly. How dare you?
yeah, you can't speak up against this man of God. Like, it doesn't matter what he's done. He's a man first, right? Because women are nothing in that place. And second of all, they shut you down. They don't ask for proof. They don't ask, and they don't care. They do not care. And it's continual. It happened. It's just going on. And you know, according to their website, to date, they have over 3,000. And this is international. This is worldwide. Can you tell me any beliefs that you remember this place, this Potter's House cult, preached that would, you know, publicly preach against beliefs or, you know, things like that, that to today, you know, is hateful, it's abusive, it's wrong. I know you said some of the things like Halloween, believing in that, knowing that they said that's the devil's day, blah blah blah. Is there any other beliefs that you now know were wrong that they would always preach about?
I mean, other than we can go and touch on the whole entire gay and lesbian thing, because that's a no-no. And like for me, if you are, I don't care. Don't hit on me. We're good. Like I have no, you do with what you want to do with your life. I will say I do remember one distinct time. My mom wanted to buy a guitar off of a girl, just like secondhand or whatever. So she went to go look at it, and the girl was a lesbian. And my mom, as she left, she handed the guitar back to the girl, and she's like, I will not buy this off of a dyke. And she left. Yeah. And I
That's
was just
sad.
like, wow. And like growing up, I never, that was one thing that I never like agreed with. I guess I always just was like, I think you get to be who you are as a person. It doesn't matter what you choose. Like I, yeah, that, but definitely like obviously being gay or lesbian isn't allowed. Even like if we want to get into churchy stuff and we go like women pastors, I they don't allow them. They you have a very specific portion of ministry, and it's usually to be a backup singer, a piano player, or a nursery worker. And like anything else is like, oh, you're overstepping. And like looking back as who I am now, I believe that there are certain points in time where women would get the point across better because it's natural for them to nurture and to love and to want to build up and, you know, to feed your children of a congregation, stuff like that. And I do hands down believe that there are certain moments in time where a woman gets things across better than a man does. Even if you wanted to go and talk to like abused women, well, guess what? A man talking to a woman who's been abused by a man isn't going to get you anywhere. You need a gentler approach. Just like stuff like that is very, very prominent to me. I mean, other than the fact that what's the harm in children believing in Santa? Like, where is the harm in that? What is going to send them to hell about believing in Santa? Like, yeah. So.
Yeah, I remember so many crazy things too. And then you walk away and you're just like, it's whatever is going to help their agenda. And, you know, I know that there's audio out there for sure. I know somebody has some audio of some of the crazy, you know, racist remarks, degrading remarks, abusive remarks that were coming from cult leaders that are still there in that place. And to date, they have no documentary against this place. And I'll tell you something, I would love to be the first. And so, you know, grabbing all of these interviews of the beautiful, amazing, brave people like yourself that choose to speak up. I do believe that one day we can get that documentary out and show people that this place is real and it exists. And if it has over 3,000 cults worldwide, according to their own website, states that, what is the harm that's happening? What's going on to children, to the less fortunate, to those that cannot speak up? You know, you being 8, 7, 5 years old, how are you going to speak up when it's normal to you? It's normal to tell people, hey, I'm going to hell. There's, you know, it's like everyday thing. It's like, you know, eating candy. Hey, you're going to go to hell. Like, this is normal. How does a child speak up and say, I don't think this is normal? They're not. They're going to think that's normal. And they're going to think you're the abnormal one when you go, that's not true. And then you become, you know, 20 years old. It's like you're still a child.
Yeah, you have to relearn life a really hard way. So, and a lot of people think too, like they like you to homeschool your kids and they like you, they don't want you to go to school and stuff like that. And so like you said, how are you supposed to tell people that at 7, 8, 9, or 6 or whatever, what's going on isn't right, or you don't think it's right, or there's weird things happening when the people you only have to go to are your parents or someone in the fellowship, or, and they're going to tell you everything's okay, and you're not allowed the outside influences of school. So you have no teachers to be like, hey, this is what's going on at home, or this is what's going on. There's, and you have no sounding board outside of the cult. And that's how they like to keep it, right? Because they don't want you having your own thoughts or your own opinions or outside influences telling you that, yeah, something's a little fucked up here, because they want to keep you in that same cycle so that eventually you'll be 18 years old and married off and you'll have your kids and you'll homeschool them and you'll be a stay-at-home mom and yada, yada, yada. And so it can just perpetuate the cycle so that you can raise up more people so that they can be discipled and sent out for another cult, and they all believe the same thing, and they all, like, and it's so ingrained into generation after generation after generation. And for me, growing up, we always were like, oh, it's a generational curse. Oh, it's a generational curse, you know, whatever. And it's like, you want to talk about what's an actual generational curse? The fact that it is ingrained into my parents, it is ingrained into me. And like, I broke the generational curse when I didn't ingrain it into my daughter. And instead, you guys,
decide to take me to court because I don't want you ingraining that into my daughter. And it's like blows my mind, but that's how, like, it's in a pyramid, right? That's how you get to the top, is you just build it. And yeah, it blows my mind.
Well, I'm so proud of you for all the steps that you've taken. And so the way out for you was when they shunned you and removed you from, so that's how your escape came.
Yep. And I just never went back. I went after my daughter was born. I think I maybe went to a Christmas service once. And again, you know, it was just like, I just sat there the entire time and I was like, I disagree with everything you are saying. And I love books. I love reading. I love expanding my knowledge. And I always have since I was a kid. And I honestly think that that's where my questions originally came from, was just like, I had so much knowledge in my head that I had no idea what to do with. Mm-hmm. And now, like, same thing. When I started diving into like other religions and what they believed, and just because I was so curious about like what I had been stifled from my entire childhood. And I was like, do I want to believe in God? Do I not want to believe in God? Like, because you get to rebuild yourself how you want to. And I was so, I read. And so I like go there for Christmas, and you know, like, you should be about the birth of Jesus and how Jesus's love for us and is, you know, like, that's the kind of stuff. And no, you go there for a Christmas service and you still somehow end up in Revelations and how the end times are here and you're gonna all go to hell. And I just like sat there and I was like, I disagree with everything you are saying. And I just, yeah, like it was so crazy to me that after spending 18 years of my life with it ingrained into me every single day, that I could still sit there and be like, nope, this isn't, I don't agree with this. And I've gone to a few other churches and everything like that, and it's the same thing. Like, I sit there and I'm like, no, this, I, tell me stuff from the Bible. Don't tell me stuff from you. Like, I feel like if the Bible is what you're preaching out of, then that's what we should be listening to. But we can't then not go through all the books and talk about how Jesus stopped them from stoning an adulteress and a prostitute. And, you know, you get into so many different levels and they don't want to talk about that stuff. They just want to talk about, you know, like, oh, you got to be good or you're going to go to hell. You got to follow this. You're going to go to hell and you're probably going to go to hell anyways. And like, I think I eventually just hit a point where in my life where I was just like, I guess if I'm going to hell, I might as well live it the way I want to. Like, if I can't appease you, then I guess here I am. So.
And that's another trait of how I feel like this religion is similar to a toxic, abusive relationship, because what you said there is like, if I can't please you, you know, if you get in a relationship with a partner and you can't please them, the abuse gets harder. It gets worse. Yeah. It gets more aggressive. And that's that's exactly how it is in this cult, in this religion, in this belief system of, if you can't please this God, then he's going to send you to a very terrible place and he's going to punish you. Even on this time here on earth, he's going to punish you by cursing you, by taking things away from you, by there. And it's like, I don't want this relationship with this God who, lo and behold, is also a man. And it's like, fuck that. Like, if you can keep all of that. And the beautiful thing is, how are you even sitting here after you've gone through all that? What walking away and clearing that out, what are some of the things that you did to clear out and to help heal?
Honestly, I started going to therapy after I got out of my abusive relationship, because I knew that I had PTSD from it. And when I went to my therapist and I was telling her about this stuff, she says to me, "Hold on, let's talk about your childhood." And I was like, "Oh, yeah, that. Let's not do that." And she was like, "No." She's like, "Whatever this is, this started a long time ago." And I was like, she's like, "Let's talk about your childhood." And so we started diving in to my childhood. And she, and like at that point, I knew something was wrong with the church. And, but in my mind, I never really wanted to grasp the concept that it was a cult. Like, I always felt like that would just then make me extra weird. And I was already a weird kid struggling, right? And so she'd be like, "Okay, so tell me more about it." And I would start telling her things, and she'd be just like double blinking me, just like, "I'm sorry, pardon me. Like, can you re-say that?" And she just would be like, "Angela, like, that's really cult level stuff." And I was like, "I know, I don't, like, as much as I don't want to admit it to myself, I know." And I started doing a lot of research and reading into like cults and stuff like that. And I was like, this is legitimately a cult. Like, this is cult. And so really what caused me to do a lot of healing though was just like, your brain, when you receive trauma, will automatically forget some of it. So that it's, that's how it processes stuff, so that you can still survive, even though you're going through very massive trauma. And so I would remember like going, even just telling childhood stories, all of a sudden like another memory would come back and I'd be like, "Whoa, I don't even remember that happening." And then that's when I was like, "Wow, that's because there was trauma involved." And, you know, it's just like, then that's when I realized, and like, so she's like, "You do have PTSD, and you do have PTSD from your abusive relationship, but you actually have PTSD from your childhood." And she's like, "You know, like, you get nightmares." And I was like, "Yeah, like all the time." And she's like, "But do those nightmares come from your abusive relationship?" And I was like, "No, they generally have me going to hell in them for some reason." And stuff like that. And like, I've had nightmares since like I was a small kid. Like, every night I would have nightmares about going to hell, or about witches beating me, or about, you know, like just so much stuff. And I'm like, as a 6 or 7 year old child, I never should have had nightmares like that, because my parents should have protected me from that. Like, they should have stood there in between and been like, "No, our 7 year old child doesn't need to know about this stuff because she's innocent." And so, yeah, that's really how I started to heal, was just like, as I started to talk about it, the more I realized that like my childhood was messed up, and like not messed up in a lot of other people's ways, but like just. And that's what's tough, because, you know, you have people and they're like, "Oh yeah, my child was messed up. My mom and my dad, they drank, they beat each other." And I'm like, I didn't have that as a child. But what I did have was just like its own sort of fucked up. And like, once you start realizing that, then you start coping with it. And then you're like, it's really powerful when you sit there and you realize that you now have like a blank slate. Like a blank slate to be who you want to be as a person. And there's nobody who is going to tell you you're going to hell. And you can actually just be a moral person. I read this thing once and it really resonated with me. But it was just like, people who go to church aren't good people. They're just bad people on a leash. And I always was like, how true is that? Because growing up, like, you would meet good people who were legitimately just good people. And to my parents, to people in the church, they were still bad people because they weren't in the church. And I always, like, now as an adult, I am a moral person. And I'm a moral person. And I don't do it because I'm like, oh, if I don't do this, I'm going to go to hell. I just do it because it's the right thing to do. And when I look at people in church, their motivations for doing the good things they do are always because they don't want to go to hell, or, you know, or they have to appease this person, or they have to look good for the pastor, or they, whatever it is, it's always got a motivation behind it that's not good. And it just, like, so when I read that, it, like, kind of blew my mind, because I was like, that is exactly how I feel. Is like, I've been to many churches, and all of them are full of bad people who go there to feel better about the bad things that they do. So yeah, I just, that's like, the healing came for me for sure when I realized that I could invent myself to be who I am. And it took a lot of searching, and I'm 27, and I'm like, very, for once in my life, I don't feel conflicted about where I stand in life. And it took a really long time to get there. And I would always, like, struggle back and forth. Like, do I believe in God? Do I not believe in God? Should I go to church? Am I going to go to hell? I'm always afraid of going to hell. And, like, finally, yeah, I just, like, reached a place of peace inside myself of being like, whatever happens when you die, I don't know. But I'm okay with not knowing, because what I want is to live my life on earth and leave a legacy for my daughter that she'll be proud of. And then whatever happens afterwards, I just don't care. Like, because when you're in church, it's always about, you're living for when you die. You know, you're living for your riches in heaven. You're living, and it's like, so you miss out on living your life, you know? And it's, what kind of life is that? What's the purpose of us being here if we don't do something with our life? And so for me, it's just like, I make sure that what I do in life sets my daughter up for success. So whether that's how I parent, or what I do for work, or how we act, or what we go do on the weekends, or if we go, God forbid, to a movie theater and watch a movie or something like that, right? Like, I want to make sure that I'm setting my daughter up for success, because that's where our generations have skewed things. Is like, before, you know, you would have grandparents who taught their grandchildren how to cook and how to can and how to, you know, and they passed on their legacy. And for me, like, that's really where I found peace, was just making sure that the legacy I passed on for my daughter was something worthy that she would pass on to her kids. And that's really where I found the healing in myself, for sure.
Awesome. It's like, you didn't want to, you wanted to end passing down the trauma. And that's what you're doing, is you said, no more. I will not pass this trauma down to my child. And that is heroic. And it's something that is going to heal your lineage. It's like healing your lineage. So one of the last questions I want to ask you is, if you could speak to your inner child, the child that went through all of that stuff in childhood, if she was standing before you right now, is there anything that you would tell her?
That the validation of others doesn't matter. And the only validation that matters is yourself. And that if you try finding love from everybody and try making sure that you're good enough for them, you will let yourself down. And at the end of the day, the only thing that matters is how you view yourself, because you will never make anybody happy, but you can make yourself happy.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for coming on here and sharing your story. You shared some pretty deep stuff that you have become the face. Like I said at the beginning, you have become the face of those in the shadows, that maybe your story will help bring them to share their story, even if it's going to law enforcement.
Absolutely.
Because if you, anybody watching has experienced any kind of physical abuse in this place, if you are able to seek outside help, such as police in your local area or the state or city that it happened in, I do recommend that. I'm going to put some links in the description box for those that, I know I had a comment in my first interview that I did with Heather Wiley. There was a comment that said they needed help because they were inside of this cult, but really not by choice, but they couldn't really state any more information. So I went ahead and gave them a number that they could reach out in the U.S. if they were in the U.S. I don't know if they were, but in the U.S. a hotline for any kind of like abuse that you can call this hotline and find help through that. So I'm going to put that number if you are in the U.S. I don't know if Canada has a hotline that somebody could also, just in case anybody from, I know you're in Canada, if anybody in Canada is watching, I'm sure I can probably research a hotline for those that might be in an unsafe place, and we can, I can go ahead and put the number for Canada hotline if there's one. I'm sure there is, there has to be. I can put that in the description box as well, because this is serious. This is really serious, mm-hmm. the things that happen in this place. And so thank you so much, Angela.
No, thanks for having me.
Do you have any last statements? Anything that you know?
Not really, other than just, if in your gut you think it's a bad place, it probably is. So,
yeah, and that's coming from somebody who was born into it.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. You know,
when you're born into it, you don't think that you're ever going to walk away from what you were born into. Like, you know what I mean? And like you said, it used to be in, like, passed down things that would help the generation. Mm-hmm. If trauma can be passed down from generations, so can healing.
Absolutely. So can
healing. And I personally have that on my website and at the very top. And that's one of the first things people see when they go into my website. If trauma can be passed down, so can healing. So can healing. And so I know in that place, they always talked about doom, gloom, generational curses. But I love to talk about the stuff that the healing that comes from becoming a butterfly, and you fly from that place, whether you escape mm-hmm. or you're kicked out, like you were.
Yeah.
At least you got out. At least you exactly. got out, right?
Absolutely. One way or another.
So, and now here you are passing down that healing mm-hmm. after the horrific abuse that you had to endure. And I'm so, so, so sorry. I like to validate, you know, the people that reach out to me and they tell me their stories in my DMs, and they tell me their story. And the first thing I say is, one of the first things I say is, I am so sorry. And usually the next statement they say is, but it wasn't your fault. It's okay. And I'm like, I was in the same place. I mm-hmm. know there is no fucking validation in that place. There is no, I'm sorry. There is no, I mean, unless it's you saying the I'm sorry, because you always gotta forgive.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have to forgive all the abuse that goes on in that place, because that makes you a good person, that's mm-hmm. going to get you to heaven. But I like to say, anybody watching this, you have your own story. Maybe you've never shared it. Maybe you have. Maybe nobody believes you. Maybe you think nobody's going to believe you. We are here to validate you. And first off, say, I am so sorry. Like, for the shit that you had to endure in that place.
Absolutely.
Not okay. Not okay. Not okay. And call it out for what it is. And that's what we're doing today, is calling it out for what it is. So thank you so much again for being here. Thank you again for those that listen. And I'm going to put some links below too as well. So check that out. I'll put a link for my own interview that I did about escaping the Potter's House cult in 2018. I'll have that link below. and some other good stuff. So thank you all so much. And until next time, I have some more interviews coming up for people that have escaped the Potter's House cult. They have reached out to me and they are wanting to publicly share their story. So everybody's story has one thing in common, is that they're brave. They are heroic. And I can almost guarantee you that people watching it that have escaped this same place or a toxic environment can find a lot of similarities, a lot of validation. And I hope at the end that this will get them to just know that they're loved. And it's okay to be yourself. It's okay. You are safe and you are worthy to exist. You are worthy to exist as you, as yourself. So that's all I have today. We'll see you next time. Thank you so much again, Angela.
Thank you.